This week, we read Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, Chapter 17, We Shop for Waterbeds.
More like we chop for them. Wait, this goes at the end of the episode, right?
Hi, all my buddies. Welcome back. Percy Jackson 2, the only Percy Jackson and reread podcast available in Esperanto. Insert note to Casey to translate this into Esperanto.
I was desperately trying to remember my Esperanto lessons from a couple of years ago on Wikipedia, on Duolingo.
I actually thought you were going to say Wikipedia.
No, it was not Wikipedia. Wikipedia, among its many services, unfortunately, does not list Esperanto lessons. Duolingo does, though. And see, William, I was prepared to wrest control of this intro away from you for a number of reasons. One, I thought it would be funny. And two, because unlike my usual Diet Coke, I'm indulging in a Dr. Pepper today. So you got to be on your toes, son. You're in trouble.
Oh. Yeah, Dr. Pepper, the most troublesome of soft drinks.
Uh-huh, absolutely. You got trouble, my friend. In a maroon can. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pepper.
They're doing a showing, a run of that, where Hugh Jackman is playing Harold Hill, and I desperately hope they do an actual filming of it.
What?
Yes.
Oh my god. God, yes!
He just wants to
I am here for that.
The man just wants to sing. And they keep...
Just let the man sing.
And they
sing.
Keep making him be growly, yelly soldier men.
Wolverine. Yeah. They keep making him be Wolverine. Yeah, God. Well, and if anything, it'll wash the taste of the Matthew Broderick one out of our mouths.
I didn't know there was a Matthew Broderick one.
It's... William, it is so much more offensive than if it had been bad, because it's not. It's just nothing.
Oh.
It's, he brings none of the Leo Bloom energy to it, and it's just this flat, lifeless TV movie that ABC put together.
Oh.
Anyway, my point is, the Music Man is, I'm not an actor. I don't want to act in things. The last time I did so, I did not enjoy it very much. But there are two roles I would desperately love to play. One is Professor Harold Hill. The other is Billy Flynn from Chicago. And I think I've come to the conclusion that mostly I would just like to dupe people and wear the very nice suits.
So you want to be a professional horse shit salesman?
Oh, yes, I want to sell them the horse shit.
Awful.
Wait, no. What was my original point? Esperanto.
We're already off the rails.
It's a beautiful language, William, and whether or not it's a functional speak to other people in language, I will say this. It's a language that when you learn it, it teaches you how to learn a language. I understand the German that I know now better because I took Esperanto lessons. I understand learning Spanish better because I learned some Esperanto. So I would encourage everybody to look into Esperanto. It's a great way to understand the nature of learning a language better. William?
Casey?
I wanted to discuss something briefly.
That's a lie.
I wanted to... As the listeners may or may not be aware, I send a list of possible episode names to my family group chat every week because I'm terrified of appearing to abuse my power in this matter, and they don't know who said which thing, and they vote on them and choose. And yesterday I was texting you about this, and you saw that in the family group chat there is one person who is marked as a reverend.
Yes.
And you remarked that, quote, you, meaning me, Casey, having a reverend in your family chat raises questions, but I think I can guess the answer unless it's something particularly out of the ordinary or ordinary, as the case may be, which is an excellent joke.
Thank you for recognizing my humor.
You deserve
and laugh.
You're very welcome.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, William. You and I have a pretty well-established straight man, like, goof dynamic, but there's also an internal reversion of that, where I'm like the level 2 straight man against your more subtle level 2 goof.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. So what do you think the explanation for
probably that one of your in-laws is just a reverend.
Okay, that is technically true. That is technically true. She got ordained to...
And either they were a reverend before they were your in-law, or at some time
well,
after.
Technically before. She got ordained in hopes of officiating our marriage. But that didn't happen because of plague reasons. So we ended up going to do it at a small efficient and public servant person's house. There was a dog named Dixie there. It was lovely. And then we came home and ate too much Olive Garden and watched Frasier. It was great. It was the best wedding day ever.
So you had one serving of Olive Garden.
Correct. But I wanted to say the fact that you said there was a reverend in our group chat was telling. In a way that you could not have known, and that betrayed the fact that, William, did you not know that I am an ordained minister? This is not a joke.
No. No, you have never told me this
really?
Before.
Yes.
Or if you have, it was in such a way that I assumed you were joking.
Yeah, that's fair. That's reasonable. That's not on you. Yes, I am an ordained minister with the Universal Life Church. I got ordained in order to officiate Phony's wedding. And
nice.
If you cross me, I will marry you to a ghost. That's not true. I
mean, you say that like that's not an entirely desirable state of affairs.
Yeah, I say that as if I haven't been listening obsessively to a song describing the intensely sensual relationship between a woman and her husband's ghost. Let me find it. What's it called? It's called Ghost Story by Charming Disaster. I recommend it. It fucking rules. I forgot
my told me he was gone. Haunts me faithful dust till dawn. Hear him whisper sweetly in my ear. Can't you see we got a good thing here? Feel his finger to caress my hair. Turn around and there is dust.
Charming Disaster, also known as Casey Hills.
Aw, buddy! You're nice! I often worry that you're secretly kind of sore at me, and then I remember that, no, this is the dynamic we have.
If I am ever actually, like, cross with you, I will tell you directly.
I know you, and I trust that. I've been working really hard on just, like, believing what people tell me and not hyper reading into every single thing, which is something my life has trained me to do, maybe through no fault of my own, but certainly through no fault of yours. But
yeah, because I take the what does our Lord and Savior Garth Marenghi say?
I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards.
I take that into my real life.
Yeah, it's a good it's a good way to live. So, what the fuck are we here to do besides immediately get off track?
No, I think that's what we're here for. We're here
probably.
We're here to read The Lightning Thief, Chapter 17, uh-huh. We Shop for Waterbeds.
Yes.
Casey.
What?
Would you please give, at the 10-minute mark, give the readers a run-up of the last episode.
There's a fun game they play on Omnibus, which is one of my favorite podcasts, where they see how long they can get into the episode without, like, naming the actual topic. And I think their record is an hour, which is pretty impressive, but by God, we're gonna beat it one day.
Probably.
Okie dokes. So last time they took a zebra to Vegas. Ares gave them a backpack full of cool shit. They rode in a truck with some very sad abused animals that we didn't want to talk about because it hurt our hearts. Because we are inured to human suffering because we're incapable of understanding the scope of it, but we can project all of that empathy onto aminals. And we recognize that, but it's still true. And ABC and Percy had a talk about her necklace bead and how her father is a real jerk and married some kind of she-gabe and how it's real bad up in her household. And then they get to Las Vegas, where the Corleone family has recently staked their claim. And they got trapped in a Lotus Eater machine, which was not even trying to disguise itself, even a little bit.
Nope.
Nope.
I'm pretty sure it is just literally the land of the Lotus Eaters.
Exactly. Yeah, it got a brand update. It got a public image facelift. And that ate up 5 days of their human lives. So they are now closer than ever to Goozled.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And we pick up right outside the Goozling.
Correct. The anti-Goozler.
Where they have a fantastic idea that I hope they continue to do.
It's so fucking good.
They, hail a taxi, and they try that infinite money card that this machine gave them, and they try it on the cabbie.
Yeah.
And, it apparently, causes a divide by zero error in his, like, fucking fare machine.
Yup.
He's like, where you wanna fucking go.
Exactly. To Santa Monica, my good man. Make haste! And it actually shows the infinity sign, which is like, if I were that cabbie, I'd be like, I'm pretty sure that's gotta be a manufacturer error. I gotta reach out to the company. That's not programmed to do that.
Yeah, if I were that cabbie, I would immediately assume, oh, this is a hacked card or something.
Get
the fuck out of my cab, criminals.
That's like it saying tilt. Come on. So they drive through the Mojave.
Yes, the Mojave.
Correct.
I am very familiar with it.
Yeah, so am I. I've driven across it many times in my life, including the drive out here to Mesa from Lancaster, which took, if I remember, it took 18 episodes of Night Vale.
Phenomenal.
Here. I started over and I got from the first episode to the election. Vote Hiram. He's a literal five-headed dragon. Also, weirdly libertarian Hiram is, but he's better than the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home for a lot of reasons. So.
Commentary.
So the PJ finally tells the gang about his dream and they try to decode it some.
Yes, they try to decode. They're still not sure what this big old voice in the darkness is.
Yeah.
But the throne room definitely sounds like Hades.
Yeah. What's up with that baritone, that basso profundo, baby?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But the book is really leaning into Hades being a false lead. But
yeah,
they're just not. They're just refusing to pick up on that.
Well, I mean, you say that, but, like, PJ is very, very concerned that they're on the wrong track with Hades, and that they won't have time to course correct if that turns out to be true.
And Annabeth and Grover, the people he brought along because they know things...
Because they're supposed to be the smart ones, especially Annabeth.
Are just like, nah, this is Hades.
Even though...
Annabeth clearly has something on her mind. She's just, no, Hades. And it's like, yeah. Annabeth. Tell Percy the thing on your mind.
Come on now.
So many problems in this book could have been circumvented if you had just told Percy the thing immediately.
Honestly, it's like the killer's lyric. Can you read my mind? No, I cannot. She does suggest that perhaps this, in the course of PJ's dream description, that this thief, this thunder stealer, if you will, which would be a catchy name for a book, has failed in his task. And I don't really understand how she got there. Like, I didn't understand a couple of the pieces she was putting together, but they're beginning to see just how many pieces of this puzzle they don't have.
Yeah.
But they do get to Santa Monica.
And it
sucks.
Slight sidebar, he mentions wind through Death Valley.
Go on.
Way. I can't tell if this is PJ or Uncle Rick missing out on some geography.
Okay.
You don't go through Death Valley going from Vegas to Santa Monica.
Well, William, maybe you would if you were a cabbie who was trying to stretch out an already preposterous fare as much as you could.
They also mentioned him going 95 miles an hour.
Yeah, that's
you're
a point.
You're not doing that in Death Valley if you're trying to live.
No, that's true. It's not called Survive Valley. Yeah.
There are not a lot of straight roads in that... area.
No, you'd think there would be more, honestly, but...
No, but it turns out it's a mountainous valley.
Yeah.
So you gotta do a bunch of twisty-turnies to get down it.
Gotta be some kind of wiggle man. So they arrive, Santa Monica sucks, just like in Falling Down and The Lost Boys.
And also in real life.
Yeah, it's true.
L.A. smells like shit.
L.A.'s the fucking worst. I hate L.A. I always have.
I like certain parts of L.A. because it has nice things.
Well, I like Amoeba, yeah.
But, like, it's one of those things where it's like every single part, except for Glendale. Yeah. Glendale smells nice, but that's mostly because it smells very heavily of Armenian food.
all the dolmas and eggplant and lamb you could possibly want.
I have never been to LA and been like, you know what, this is a good olfactory experience.
Exactly. This makes me hungry for what I'm smelling. So, fortunately, PJ feels the way about LA that we do, basically. So I guess maybe we're New Yorkers at heart. I don't know.
Oh, I hate New York too.
Okay. I've never been there and I feel like I'm good.
I don't like giant metropolitans.
Okay. That's fair. That's not how humans are supposed to live.
No.
But you've been to New York.
No. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't have to touch the stove to know it will hurt.
Fair enough. There's a book by an author I love, N.K. Jemisin. It's called The City We Became, and it's a sort of like neo-Lovecraftian in the way that all the good Lovecraftia is being written by like black women right now in the very best way. Yeah. It rules. But like it proposes that once a city hits a certain point, it becomes alive, like it has a birthing process. And so there are several characters in the book who are cities, like there's Sao Paulo and stuff like that. But New York is in the process of trying to be born, but because it's divided up into boroughs the way it is, it has like six avatars. So the like plot coupon of the book setup is that they have to go around and they have to collect, you know, go find Staten Island and go find Queens and go find the Bronx and Brooklyn and all these guys. If I just said one of the boroughs wrong, don't fucking at me. I don't care. Because my point is it's excellent. And there's a lady who's hunting them who is implied to be another city, but not one of ours. And, I know it's very good. Her name starts with R. I'll tell you that much. But, the only drawback of it for me, from my experience. Exactly. The only drawback for me is that the book is New York as fuck. The book, and I get why, obviously.
I mean, it is about New York in the most literal possible
exactly
way.
And it's fair enough, but like it's page after page of rhapsody about the beauty of New York and the scent of New York and the all of it, and I'm just like, okay, like I believe you believe it, sure.
Yeah, it's like
whatever.
I'm not a fan of literal oceans of trash, but you know.
Exactly. Diaper Island Ho. Anyway, well, they get there, and PJ makes the worst decision any human could make and just walks into the ocean.
Yeah, no, he just straight up walks into the surf without a care in the world.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, and it does in fact be fine.
Yeah.
Underwater's cool.
Underwater's the best. I still want to breathe underwater. And he immediately... No. Meets everyone's new favorite character, a dumb Sharko buddy who rubs on him like a kitty cat.
Oh, yeah, no, going hard into the all animals are dogs trope.
Hello there. It's me, Sharko. Would you like a guide here in the underwater lands?
So he can talk to the zebra, because he can apparently talk to horses.
Correct.
But can he not talk to the shark?
I guess not. Poseidon didn't create sharks.
Very strange. But, yeah, he rides that shark.
Here, grab onto my fin, good buddy. I will take you out to sea.
I like how you're making the shark sound like Mr. Ed. And not the zebra.
Nope. Yes, and it gives him a ride from where he is now out to the edge of the epipelagic zone and to the lip of the mesopelagic.
Absolutely. Good terms.
The dark, dark ocean.
And he sees a lady.
Yeah.
A Nereid.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. Sorry.
That's how it's pronounced.
Sorry. I believe it is Nereid. You're correct. But I wanted to say briefly. He wonders briefly. Momentarily that, like, shouldn't I be worried about pressure crushing my organs or getting the bends or something? And then it turns out it's just not a problem. It's fine. Which...
I knew I should have been crushed by the pressure, but then again, I shouldn't have been able to breathe. Yeah. I wondered if there was a limit to how deep I could go, if I could sink straight to the bottom of the Pacific. Which, you know what? That's a good question.
I am curious as well. Because there was a quote just before that, when he got to the edge of the Meso-Pelagic, says, "The shark carried me down into the darkness. It deposited me at the edge of the ocean proper, where the sandbank dropped off into a huge chasm. It was like standing on the rim of the Grand Canyon at midnight, not being able to see much, but knowing the void was right there." And the ocean, like the oceanic abyss, is one of the most terrifying places on the planet. We know nothing about it.
It is one of my favorite things.
I know, it's so good!
I have like the opposite of the thalassophobia. Like, I want to go into the ocean and see what's there.
I want to, but I'm scared to, and that's why I want to be buried at sea, because then I won't have anything to be afraid of, and I can still find out.
I'm not scared of the ocean, but I am scared of sharks.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm not scared of the ocean, I'm scared of what's in the ocean. When I was a kid, I obsessively read a book over it. So you remember the movie, the hit movie of 2017, The Meg, starring Jason Statham.
Oh, very well. It was definitely my best day of movie going, where I saw The Meg and The Predator in the same day. It was,
oh, buddy!
It was a poor string of decisions.
I hate that. We talked about this in one of the pre-shows. I hate The Predator more than I have hated any movie in my life, even Batpants v Superface Dawn of Soup. But anyway, The Meg, yeah. You must admit, The Meg knew itself. The Meg knew what kind of movie it was.
The Meg knew what it was. It knew what it was doing, and it was doing it on purpose.
Exactly. Okay.
Whatever else can be said of it.
So The Meg was based on a novel called Meg by a novelist called Steve Alton, who went on to write some really fucking bonkers stuff about, like, the Mayan gods returning, and also one about the, like, international crime conspiracy regarding oil and a plague being released, which turned out to be frighteningly prescient in a couple of ways, but that's neither here nor there. He did go on to write, like, five or six more giant fuck-off shark novels. Fans of that series, like myself, had been waiting for a film adaptation of any of them for more than 20 years. So getting The Meg was a pretty sweet treat. And I like what they realized while they were making it, which is that we can't bank on sequels. We have to just make this thing. We have to make it goofy, and we have to do it. It was great. But the second book in that series, it's called The Trench. Has them going back down into the Marianas Trench, and it's just...
Yeah, into the weird bullshit sci-fi layer of the ocean?
Exactly, yes, where the monsters live, and they find...
That is not even remotely how any of that works.
Nope. And they find not only more living megalodons, they find chronosaurs, who are a kind of like plesiosaur or mosasaur that have managed to survive down there, and all kinds of cool shit. It's so fucking good. But there is a lot of talk about them. There's a lot of detail about depressurizing and people getting the bends if they don't do it right.
Yeah.
And it has filled me with a lifelong fear of getting like nitrogen bubbles in my joints.
Yeah, no, it's real bad. It's one of those things where it's like, once when you know how to avoid it, you usually can.
Right.
But it is one of those things where it's like, if something goes fucky, you might not have a face.
No, you're gonna have a bad, bad time. The other thing I wanted to say was my favorite Futurama joke, which is the one where they end up at the bottom of the sea in the lost city of Atlanta.
and the pressure from the water is crushing the Planet Express ship, and Fry says, well, what's going on? And the professor says, we're under millions of atmospheres of hundreds of atmospheres of water. And Fry says, well, how many can the spaceship tape? And the professor says, well, it's a spaceship, so between zero and one.
Yeah, that is a question of how that pressure works.
Yup. Answer, shut up and watch the cartoon. But,
so, it's an Aereid. It's Galadriel.
Yeah, except even less helpful.
Correct. Is that Maya freaking out back there?
That's all the dogs.
All the dogs. Name your dogs.
We have Maya, Oscar, and Barry.
Those are very good names for dogs.
Barry is usually good. Oscar is a terror. Sure. I don't care for him. he's great. You know, I love all my children equally. I don't care for Michael.
Okay, I am going to... This is the only time I'll ever do this. I'm going to give you a definitive list of my cats. Would you like that?
Sure.
Okay.
I would love to hear all the cats you have after you told me I had too many cats.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the joke. I'm about to lose the high ground here. And if anybody feels like telling how many cats I have to, for example, a local governing body who might be interested in that, just remember, snitch 'em, add stitch 'em. Okay, so...
A-cab, and that includes you, motherfucker.
Correct. So, I work at an urgent care. We give stitches. We don't get them. Anyway, so, there's Paisley, who's the oldest, and I posted a picture of him actually just yesterday on our Twitter because he was helping me read the book. There's Paisley and Cooper. They're the oldest. They're the ones from the old house. And then we've got Jasper, and we've got Holland, and we've got Dr. Hunter S. Tomcat, Doctor of Tiny Journalism. And then we've got the Feral Sisters, Bones, and Mogwai. So I think that's seven. Yes, seven total.
You don't talk about Bones and Mogwai often.
No, they're ferals. We rescued them from the roof of my wife's job like 4 years ago, and they have never fully acclimated to living with people. And if we like took them to a shelter, they would probably be put down because they're like, Bones will sometimes come hang out with us and be pet, but like, it's clear she thinks she's doing you a favor, and she will turn on you like that if she doesn't like what you're doing and be mean about it. So they're more like roommates than pets. They just kind of mind their own business.
Oh, Jesus.
But yeah, so that's the definitive ranking, or listing anyway, of Casey's cats. Keep it under your cat caps, listeners. William, yeah. You can see what Dr. Pepper does to me. It's a focus potion.
Oh, so you should drink it more often.
Mm-hmm. So, it's Galadriel.
And she says to him, a bunch of nonsense.
Yeah. Waka waka, Cupid shuffle.
Telling him that, you know, you don't judge your dad too hard.
Yeah.
He's not allowed to help you directly. Which,
he's
like,
at work.
And it's like, fucking stupid gods.
Bullshit.
And there's stupid rules. Why are there some rules they can break, but not others?
This is bullshit. It's real apologist. Like William, in our Babylon 5 episode that we did for the Patreon, available for $10 a month. Actually, wait a minute. Did we ever decide for the Patreon, are the movie review episodes available to listen to at lower tiers, and you only get to choose one if you're $10 a month?
I don't know.
Well, they should be. We need to entice the people.
The Patreon just says, on the $10 monthly movie review of your choice.
Of your choice, so you get to choose at the $10. Okay, William, should we make the movie review, should we make them available to the $5 listeners?
Sure.
Okay, you know what? We'll make $5, like, the real... That's where the meat of the buy-in, right? Okay, cool.
Sure.
Anyway, when we were watching Babylon 5, like, the station security chief... Not Worf.
Garibald.
Says... No. That's not... okay, then maybe I meant not Kira.
That would be Takashima.
Takashima, thank you. I did not want to try to do that name from memory and sound like a huge fucking racist. She's talking about how, like, her big realization was that you need to change the system from within, because it's 1993 and we still have hope that institutions are fundamentally good.
Yeah.
And
we sure do, don't we?
We sure do. And this this speech from Galadriel has that same energy, really. It's like, you know, your dad is a job creator.
Yeah, it's like he's forbidden to help you directly. He was also forbidden from having you, but you
exactly.
know.
Exactly. But you know, that's your problem somehow. So she got some help to appear to him in the Mississippi through her cousins, the Naiads, who are freshwater Nereids, I guess.
Yes.
Who honor Poseidon, quote, though they do not serve in his court, which is extremely interesting.
Yes, because he is the god of the sea, not rivers.
Correct.
They are somehow separate.
Yes, sure.
Even,
I don't know.
Even though PJ does get energy from freshwater, too.
Well, I mean, in fairness, salt water is mostly fresh water, right?
Yeah, but, you know.
I'm just saying. Anyway, so they've been watching him his whole life, which is pretty gross. And they love him, and they want to help, and are allowed to. So she is here with a gift and a warning.
The gift are a number of pearls.
Poils.
When you are in need, smash a pearl at your feet.
Correct. And they will help somehow.
What will happen? That depends on the need. And it's like,
okay.
And the warning.
The warning is, trust your heart, don't listen to a fucking word Hades says, and don't let him lock the door behind you.
Yes. Cause, Hades is a slippery bastard.
Yeah, and he just acts like drywall.
Well, I mean, if drywall is done correctly, it's the opposite of slippery.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
And he will absolutely hone in on the slightest bit of doubt in your mind.
It's what he does. Can't really hold it against him.
I mean, you can. That's kind of the purpose of holding it against someone.
Yeah, all right.
You did a thing.
That's fair.
Stop it.
That about wraps up their end of things. But he says, wait, real quick, you mentioned before I shouldn't trust the gifts. What gifts shouldn't I trust? To which she responds, goodbye.
I hate this fucking cryptic shit.
I know.
I hate it so much.
Yep.
I will never let it slide.
No, you gotta keep them honest.
It makes me physically angry somehow.
I know it does, bud.
Which
I
is like, if you're not actually going to give me the helpful part of the information, you're just wasting time and words.
Yep, and page space.
And I can do that on my own just fine, thank you very much.
It's true, you're very good at that. I could have McDonald's at home. Cut to McDonald's at home. It's a slice of ham. I don't know.
I like ham.
I do like ham. So, ABC don't like them pearls.
Not at all.
No.
She's like, there is absolutely a price on these things. We should not use them if at all possible.
Quote, no gift comes without a price. Quick question, Annabeth. Do you know how presents work?
I mean, these are presents from the gods.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I will also say that, like, that was pretty glib of me. She's an abused child emotionally, so, yeah, you know, she's got trust issues, and that's fair.
Yeah, no, she absolutely does. Yeah, her family absolutely seems like the sort of thing to, like, give her what she asked for Christmas and then hold it over her head 3 months later.
Yeah, exactly. We sacrificed so much for you, and if we were good parents, we wouldn't tell you that, because that's supposed to be the whole point. Anyway.
Yeah, at least not until you're old enough to actually be a shitbag.
Well, yeah, and, like, appreciate what that means instead of just feel bad about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. They gotta go look for DOA records.
Yeah, and it turns out no one seems to know what that is.
No, not even a bus driver who recognizes PJ, but they say that he's a child actor stunt double, which is actually a really great excuse considering where they are.
Yeah, no, that They're in LA looking for a recording studio.
Right? Yeah, full of actors, full of music people.
Yeah, it's like, of course, why wouldn't he be?
Why wouldn't he be? We're rewatching Barry on the home box office. I recommend it to any and everyone. It's incredible. It's a destroyer. And there's a bit in there, like, one of the hardest and most impressive things to do is good, bad acting, right? Like when someone is a good actor and they have to pretend to be a bad actor. And
Steve Carell is very good at it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I like Steve Carell on balance, but like, he makes me want to cringe myself into a singularity.
He's extremely powerful in that way. Yes. We love you, Steve Carell. We're sorry about Space Force getting canceled, but who was that for?
Have you ever seen Dinner for Schmucks?
Yes, it's brutal.
Are you familiar with the concept of psychic damage?
Right? Just rolling a D12 every scene.
It hurts me in my brain in a very sincere way.
God, that's such a good movie.
I don't know if
it's Jermaine Clement out of nowhere.
I don't know if it is.
It is.
But it is.
I'm here to tell you it is.
But what it's doing what it set out to do. I don't know if that is the same thing as being good, but there you have it.
That's fair. Well, so this has been the Steve Carell Appreciation Hour. Dear Steve, make Get Smart too. Anyway, what the fuck was I saying? Barry. There's a bit in there where Barry is a bad actor. And he just keeps getting, like, plugged and cast in things. And everybody's like, what the fuck? Barry's not even a very good actor. Well, yeah, he's Bill Hader. Turns out when you look like Bill Hader, people want to cast you in things.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Bill Hader has just a face you want to put in things.
He does. He's very tall and very intense.
And fairly handsome.
Exactly. Man, that's a good show. So. They see on the television that Gabe and his grief counselor, Sugar, are being interviewed by Barbara Walters.
Well, this is absolutely Barbara Walters' wheelhouse.
That's just Babs.
Some schmuck in New York is sad about his car.
His wife, he does, in fairness, he says he's sad about losing his wife and Camaro in that order.
Is like, yeah, absolutely. Let's get Barbara Walters, the, like, fucking peak of human interest stories on this.
Right. Let's get Babs on the beat. They show the picture, from the diner with Aries that, that fry cook snapped, which we knew was going to be trouble.
Of course.
I'm fairly active on the Camp Half-Blood subreddit. I'm trying to be as active as I can without getting banned for posting more of our episodes. But,
I think as long as you don't do that, you're fine.
Well, I'm allowed to post one a month, apparently, because it links to outside the website. And I'm trying to get clarification on whether one a month means, like, one in April, one in May, or does that mean 30 days between? But, there's, especially with the advent of the new program, there's a lot of like, hey, should Uncle Rick have a cameo? What should Uncle Rick do for his cameo? Of course they've got to have one. And I think, Uncle Rick would do an excellent job as the fry cook who snaps the picture of them in the parking lot.
Yeah. You know what? There are like three dudes throughout this, like three or four people throughout this book who's end up snapping pictures of PJ. He should be all of them.
Exactly. Yes, he should be all of them.
Like maybe put him in like a fake beard so it doesn't look so it doesn't look like the same dude is just a fry cook in Denver and also
just looking for work.
You know, a bus driver in New Jersey. But
just crisscrossing this great nation like these kids in search of work in a dying economic landscape.
Yeah, but you know, definitely, like, you know, that sounds like a reasonable cameo.
Yeah. So, Babs asks, is Percy Jackson a delinquent? Oh, wait, sorry, let me put the filter on. ratchet, attach it.
Oh, no.
Is Percy Jackson a delinquent? terrorist, or perhaps the brainwashed victim of a frightening new cult?
And that's a fun question, because the answer, William, technically, is all three.
Also, it's like, Barbara Walters, I don't think this is your job.
Babs, this is not your...
I don't think this is your beat.
This is not your... Go cover, like, a gala or something. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what you do, Babs. Nobody watches the news. I sure don't. I should.
I can't think of Barbara Walters' face as we speak, but...
You know what? I listen to news programs, and I don't know what any of those people look like, and I'm fine with that. Also, they don't know what I look like, so it works out.
Whoever hurries him along.
Yeah.
Into the grips of delinquents.
Correct. PJ hates LA because it doesn't make any sense and wants to prove it to you. And as if to take a step toward that goal, they are accosted by a gang of wasps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the bugums. Not the helpful pollinators.
No, the absolute waste of space white kids.
Correct. I believe that's what WASP stands for. And they prepare to kick ass.
And you know what? Good on Percy for being quick on the draw. He just immediately whips out Riptide and goes at the guy. But yep. You know, that stupid anti-mortal, you know, mortal not hurty.
Yeah, the mortal not hurty field. Fuck you and your episode titles.
Like, maybe Chiron should have given him some, like, anti-mortal defenses.
Exactly. Maybe a gun. Because, like, I'll say this, PJ seemed pretty ready to just straight up murder what appeared to be a bunch of human children.
Well, I mean, they were threatening him with knives, so...
Yeah, that's fair, what's
good is what's good.
He's been through a lot, and what's good is what's good. But, so, they voop, they make good their escape, and seek refuge in Krusty's Waterbed Palace, yet another decaying small American business. It is perhaps worth noting, listeners, that because I take notes in a notebook and then transcribe those using voice-to-text with my phone, my notes, in fact, read Krusty's, like the brand of toaster pastry.
Oh, phenomenal.
Yeah, I think that's a toaster pastry, isn't it?
I've never had one, so I don't know.
I'm gonna look it up. Let's see what Krusty's is, and why the hell is my voice-to-text defaulting to that as thinking it's what I meant. Let's see here. Capaste. Krusty's. Pancake mix. Waffle recipes. Okay, so Krusty's is a brand. It's a consumer food product brand since 1932. Looks like it's sort of a competitor to Bisquick. Its main product is factory-prepared, shelf-stable flour and dried buttermilk mixture that can be used to make biscuits, pancakes, waffles, cobbler, and dump cake.
Ooh, dump cake.
What the fuck is dump cake?
So
it sounds like an upsetting internet term somebody made up to describe a lady.
It's not. I promise it's not. It's a good thing. It might be now, but it's kind of like an upside down cake where you put.
It's still just called a cake, but all right.
Where you put like canned fruit at the bottom of a pan.
All right,
and then honestly, it's just a cobbler, really.
Okay,
and you put like a sweet like dough mix on the top.
Okay,
You usually
pretty good so far.
And you usually put brown sugar and cinnamon on top to have it crisp up in the oven. It's delicious.
That sounds really good, actually.
As far as I can tell, it's called a dump cake because you kind of just dump everything in the pan.
Dump everything in there. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's a Midwesternist hell thing, but you know what? Say what you will about Midwestern cooking. Like, they have the heavy and they have the sweet down pat.
Exactly. Their range is limited, but they're good at what they do.
Don't ask them for spicy or complex, but like, if you want something that will send you straight into like a food coma, hit up a Wisconsin, swap meet.
If you need diabetes and you need it now. That sounds a lot like every year we make a kind of blueberry crumble here in the winter, which is just like blueberries in a pan, and then you cover it with like homemade granola and sprinkle it with brown sugar, and then you just bake that shit. It's real good. Yeah.
Yeah. same genre of thing.
Exactly. Same genre of food. Okay. And they are met by one of my favorite descriptors in the book so far, a guy who looked like a raptor in a leisure suit. It's Krusty!
Yeah. He was at least 7 feet tall with absolutely no hair. He had gray leathery skin, thick-lidded eyes, and a cold reptilian smile.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I'm going to be honest, I am picturing a tall Beetlejuice.
Yeah, I could see that.
Or like a really thin Uncle Fester.
I am trying to find a picture of the guy I am picturing. Let me see here. Oh, never mind.
Couldn't find him?
Well, it turns out if you search baskets and almost anything else, you're going to get a lot of results you're not looking for. But yeah, he reminds me of an actor from the program Baskets. I really like tall Beetlejuice. That's a good description. Tall Beetlejuice or tall Uncle Fester. He does have powerful Christopher Lloyd energy.
Yeah. Christopher Lloyd, also seen in the recent film Nobody.
Yeah, Nobody was so much fun.
Oh, speaking of movies that knew what they were.
Yo, for real. Like, we said it in the pre-show a couple weeks ago, and we'll say it now. John Wick and Nobody are the same movie, except one takes itself 10,000% seriously, and one just has a good time.
One is a joke.
Exactly, and they are both the correct decision. Anyway.
Yeah, I really hope that this genre, that this like mold of movie continues to be a thing.
Exactly, like if there had been Armageddon, and then instead of Deep Impact being like an actual competitor, if Deep Impact had just been like a rom-com.
Yeah.
but still about, well, actually, if I recall correctly, some minors get married in that movie, which is very weird, so at least it's got the rom part, but maybe not the com.
Yeah, it's a weird movie.
And as if you hadn't guessed yet, almost without preamble, Krusty immediately imprisons them on various waterbeds.
Oh yeah, no, it's not even a full page later.
Nope, just jumping right in.
He's like, hey kids, come look at my waterbeds. Oh, the waterbeds are trapped.
Hey children, have a stretch out on my slushy sleeper.
Now you're just sounding like Muscle Man from Regular Show.
Yeah, he immediately imprisons them on various waterbeds, which will stretch them.
It's like these kids are like addicted to traps.
They
like,
really, really are.
Because I'm going to be honest, like if I was hiding from some hooligans,
yeah,
and I saw this guy in the same room as me, I would. Yeah. I think I'd choose the hooligans.
I would take my chance with the street toughs. Absolutely. And so apparently he imprisons them on these waterbeds, which have like magic, like Dr. Seuss hands on ropes kind of things,
yes,
which will stretch them until they're exactly 6 foot long to fit the beds. Now, William.
Yes.
I know that this is a fun show, and I know that sometimes we get a little heavier than we mean to, and especially when we stumble over something that could be traumatic, it is important to keep in mind that what is a good goof for one might not be a good goof for all. So I wanted to ask, was it traumatic for you?
Here we go.
Reliving the experience. Reliving the experience that led you to the place in your life where you are now, seeing these children go through the Williamization process.
And that's when I shot him, Your Honor.
Oh, well, you know, William, that's what you get. So there.
You're going to find out what you get. It was like being run over by a steamroller. I saw it coming, but I just couldn't do anything about it.
Nope! It's going to happen no matter what. So they're on the Williamizers.
Yeah.
They too will be 8'47" one day. And
although fun fact, I got most of my height over the course of like 2 years. It hurt.
Oh, I believe like, it. Yeah, like, that sounds like it sucks.
Like, I went from, like 5 foot two to, like, six to, you know, my height over the course of, like, over the course of, like, a year and a half, maybe. And,
yikes.
I shot up real quick. And, like, there was just a solid, like, year of my teenagehood where my knees were in constant soreness.
You got them groaning bones. Oof. I'm so sorry. That's one thing as a short man I never really had to deal with.
Like, no joke, I could literally feel them stretching.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. I don't want to feel my knees doing any such thing. I'm always making jokes. How tall are you actually?
6'3".
You're 6'3", okay, and I'm 5'8 and change. Those are the real heights.
You are a much closer to average height.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I'm not a tall man. I'm not actually a short man, but I feel short.
You're not especially short. You are. No. You are perfectly average.
Even if you start measuring at the base. No, never mind. I am, especially if you are not using French feet.
Yes.
That was a Napoleon joke. My point is that this guy is called Procrustes.
His name is legally Procrustes, which is like...
which is really funny. I want to know more about that.
Legally, no. Fuck off.
So did you twig this? I mean, obviously we twigged that this was going to be something. Obviously.
Oh, because... I knew this was going to be a trap immediately, because no one looks like that who isn't trying to, like, disappear you into a van.
I don't know. I don't think making those kind of assumptions about... Well, then again, he is being pursued by literal monsters, so maybe PJ's context is different.
I did not twig that it was this guy. I did not remember him.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I've ever heard of this guy, ever.
But then again, Theseus is one of the people I know less about.
That's fair. So, and we then pivot into... I kind of want to give my Brunner to just the whole end of this chapter, because PJ pivots brilliantly. He just pirouettes.
Oh, yeah, no, he does just the most brilliant mental Aikido.
So, you're a monstro.
You know what? This is a really cool trap. I gotta give it to you.
Exactly. You worked hard on this. I can tell. The workmanship. Percy! Annabeth yelled. What are you doing? Don't mind her, I told Procrustes. She's impossible.
Jesus.
Dames, you know. The giant laughed. All my customers are never 6 feet exactly. So inconsiderate! And then they complain about the fitting! It's so good. And it's also a really interesting glimpse into, like, the monster mindset, because they kind of have to... Okay, so, like, on the Camp Half-Blood subreddit, there was a question, and people said, do you think Hera could cheat on Zeus if she wanted to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was some pretty interesting debate in there. But where I came down was that no, because, like, Zeus, as we know, is not the god of being a good husband, right?
No.
But Hera is literally the goddess of marriage, and she is kind of, like, the metaphysical expression of that concept, right?
Yeah.
So she would have to change her fundamental nature in order to do so, at which point we would have to start asking, is she still Hera? And that's a different thing. But, like, it's just really interesting that you look at Procrustes, and, like, he's a hell of a nice guy. He just also stretches people until they're 6 feet tall and then cuts them in half.
Yeah.
Because it's his nature. It's what he is.
It is his nature to murder people.
And he's so bound by it, and he doesn't see that anyone could possibly object. Like, he looks at these kids and, like, well, these kids are here, they must want to be stretched to 6 feet and cut in half.
Oh, no, I absolutely get the vibe that he knows what he's doing, he just enjoys it.
Well, yeah, but, like, because it's his job, I don't know, it's just, there's a weird thing, because, like, at a certain point, once you start examining, like, the motivations of monstrosity, it breaks down to either they're, like, a human serial killer and they're deeply broken and need help, or, like, monster gonna monster, right? Like, if there was a real Minotaur and a real labyrinth, it probably wouldn't be hunting people down. It would just be trying to survive, right? So we need to ascribe these other motivations to it to make it fit the story shape. And similar, like, why Procrustes cut people in half? Because Procrustes gonna Procrustes, right? Don't worry about it.
I mean, Procrustes enjoys cutting people in half. What do you want?
Fair enough. He's a man of simple. He, go ahead and tell us more about the etiquette judo.
So he just really, Percy, just bravo, young sir. Yeah. He really leans into the, like, beautiful, gracious customer. Because he points out.
It's like a commercial.
I remembered the story, the giant who tried to kill Theseus with excess hospitality.
Yeah.
So he is being the best host, the best guest he can be in this moment.
To feed into the hospitality thing. Yes.
Yeah. And he's like, so what do you do if they're longer than 6 feet?
Right. Awesome. Simple. Cut them in half.
I cut off the excess.
Yeah.
and he.
Elegant.
And he whips out a frickin' Libris.
Yep.
Which,
a book.
No, there's a type of axe in ancient Greek called a...
That's true.
I'm probably saying it wrong. Called a Libris. And it's not a weapon axe. It's a ceremonial axe.
But, oh, I see.
It's a large two-headed axe that was usually used for sacrifices.
Oh.
There's no mention or depiction of it being used as an actual, like, fighting implement.
Right.
But that doesn't stop pop culture, because Greek heroes with a giant bronze two-headed axe is a really good look.
It's a Franzetta as hell image is what it is.
And you know what? I have difficulty disagreeing.
Yeah, it's reasonable. Fun fact that reminded me of, because of Libris, do you know why? I would not be surprised if you did. Do you know why the abbreviation in English for pounds is LB?
Yes. Well, I thought I did.
What did you think?
I thought it was the shortening of the Latin word for pound.
Okay.
Which is like liba or something. I don't know. Maybe I don't.
That may or may not be a factor. My understanding is that it is an abbreviation of or reference to the astrological sign Libra, which is in fact a pair of scales.
Ah, yes, that makes sense.
Yeah. I enjoy that kind of insider baseball linguistic knowledge a lot, and like when I take my cats to the vet and they tell me, oh, Holland J. Cat weighs 9.6 pounds, I always write 9.6 little Libra sign, just because I'm cool.
You are absolutely cool, Casey.
I'm the coolest, William.
It reminds me of, do you know why the periodic symbol for lead is PL? Or PB.
I do, but I cannot conjure it to mind at the moment. It has something to do with plumbing, I think. Go ahead.
Related. The Latin, that's because it is using the Latin word for lead, which is plumbum.
Right.
And plumber used to be the word for anyone who worked with lead. Lead used to be used for all sorts of things. Used to be used for roofing tiles. Some tools were made with like lead alloy.
Probably some things. Drinking vessels, because lead actually tastes very sweet.
Possibly, and pewter is perfectly safe to use, but it does contain lead.
So what is it that makes it safe then? Does it have some sort of natural counterbalance?
I think it's an alloy of lead and tin. And
so the tin neutralizes the toxic qualities of the lead?
It's why if you ever get like a pewter like figurine, they tell you not to let it get too hot, because it will start to like melt out of the pewter. It's also why people used to think tomatoes were poisonous, because the acidity in the tomatoes was leaching out little bits of lead into the food.
Interesting.
And causing people lead poison.
Their leaves and stems are, though, I believe. Aren't those nightshade?
Their leaves and stems sometimes are, but even when they're not, they have no... They like are not rhubarb. Nutritionally, like, relevant.
Neato.
But that leads us down to modern plumbers, because water pipes were the last, thing that used lead in large quantities, and we don't do that anymore, but the name plumber just...
Well, I was going to say until gasoline, yeah.
the name plumber just stuck around.
Just means leadsmith?
Yeah.
Neat. How cool.
It is.
We're learning stuff about lead. I love this show. I would listen to this show.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Well, I do. Several times. Yeah. So we're friends on Twitter with a number of other Percy Jackson read-through shows. In fact, there's one, I think, just called the Seaweed Brain Pod, which I think is specifically about Persebeth shipping.
Oh, phenomenal.
I don't know how I feel about shipping minors, but I'm glad y'all found whatever's going on over there. But there's another one.
I have far too many thoughts. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Is it about how many miners can fit into a shipping container?
On average, about 15.
There we go. There's another one with whom we're friends called Camp Half Pod, which I think we can agree is a much better name than ours.
I wish we had thought of it first, but they
Me
probably,
too!
But they probably started a few years ago.
They definitely did, yeah. God bless them. Fair play, ladies. Anyway, I like the Jackson, too. It's good.
Yeah. It's more us, although, if we're being honest.
It really is. It's more honest. Okay, so PJ, in classic Greek hero fashion, takes his little plan and turns it on itself and tricks him into lying on one of his own beds, which gives us one of the best lines in a chapter and full of great lines, which is that, the ropes readjusted themselves at my command. Krusty's whole head stuck out at the top. His feet stuck out at the bottom. No, he said. Wait, this is just a demo.
Yeah, no, he is a sleazy salesman to the end.
And he's good at it.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good. It's just great.
Yeah, and just with ice water flowing through his veins.
Possibly literally.
Percy proceeds to fucking decapitate him.
Just chop him in half. Maybe not well, because if it was the head, that's probably not a very good estimation of half, but it's a disrespect to the work he was doing there.
No, he literally says he cuts him in half. He decapitates him.
Oh, does he? Gross.
He goes to his head, raises his sword, and then Krusty stops.
Okay. Well, then that raises the question to me. Does he get Krusty's head? Like, he got Medusa's? I mean, because Krusty's a monstro, right?
They don't...
He should,
but they don't go into it.
So what sort of monstro is... Like, was he just a guy who did this, or was he actually...
He was a giant.
Oh, he was a giant. Okay. So are giants not monstros?
They are.
Okay, well then, yeah, he should get a trophy. That's what
I think. He should get a trophy, but...
I am a millennial, and I demand this boy gets a trophy.
I think his trophy is his compendium of LA area monsters.
Yes, that's really good. Okay, so they go back to the office and they raid yet another monster-owned small business.
Yeah, and as is only correct.
Great. And they find the, quote, all-new compendium of L.A. area monsters. The only monstrous yellow pages you'll ever need. And I love that so much. I love the implication that there's this, like, community of monsters living in L.A.
It's called L.A.
With my best old ex-friend, Ray.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
That's just the way it goes. That was a Jim Croce reference. I don't have an ex-friend. Oh. Ray. Yeah.
I was actually going to get sad.
No. Operator? No. She's living in L.A. with my best old ex-friend, Ray.
I don't know.
She said she knew well and sometimes hated.
I don't know from Jim Croce.
Fuck. We gotta change that. Jim Croce wrote two kinds of songs, William. He wrote heartbreaking ballads of loss and love and the ravages of time, and he wrote songs about being in gangs and having gang fights and doing crimes.
Yeah, that sounds like a vibe.
And then he died in a plane crash too young and too soon.
Oh,
what are you going to do?
Unfortunate.
Anyway, that was the Jim Croce corner from Casey. So yes, they raid his office. They find this compendium of LA Monstros. And what do they learn in this, William?
That DOA Studios is, like, next door.
Yeah, exactly. It's literally right there. It's a block. Oh, they can see it.
It is pretty contrived.
They were looking at it when they got ushered into Krusty's waterbed palace.
It is pretty contrived, but it's fun.
Yep. Give us a minute, Grover complained. We were almost stretched to death. Then you're ready for the underworld, I said. It's only a block from here, and that is chapter 17. William, what are we reading next week?
Next week we're reading chapter 18, Annabeth goes to obedience school.
That's, I can't wait to learn why that's not problematic. So yes, go ahead and read that for next time, where we find out, do Monstros take the regular human bus or the Erebus?
Oh,
what
fuck
kind of
you.
Small business will the gang destroy next? Odysseus's bakery? That'd be fun. And were those gang kids actually just going to challenge them to a dance fight? Maybe we'll find out next time. So go read chapter 18. Orm, Annabeth joins a fundamentalist religious cult. That's not true. I don't have a joke about obedience.
You've never known it a day in your life.
Never have done. You can and should tweet at us, please. Find us at the_Jackson_TWO. We would love to hear from you. We would love to hear your Brunners.
Mr. Brunner?
In my world, I'm known as Chiron.
William?
Yes?
What was running through your mind?
Well, see, I was Brunning in the 90s.
Right. Baby, you were born to Brun.
I can't think of a third joke. I think we have the same Brunner this week.
Brunning in the shadows?
Where Percy just out of nowhere gets like
so good.
A level 45 wisdom. And
it's,
just
I know.
Completely turns Krusty's shit around on him.
He really does. It's and so beautiful.
It's really good. Like Percy gets mean when he's fighting.
Yeah, it's great.
Because like, he tricks the guy into sitting on the bed and just goes from this like pretty jovial attitude to just like, you're going to die now.
Built-in lava lamps. Yeah, and that actually leads to my specific Brunner, which is not just that whole scene, but it's the sort of the climax of it when Krusty is tied up and says, I'll give you 30% off on selected floor models. No money down. No interest for 6 months. I swung the sword. Krusty stopped making offers.
Yes. And sleazy salesman to the last.
And that is a wrap on Krusty. It was brutal. It was great. I love this chapter a lot. It made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, I am a fan of this chapter.
Yeah. So those are our Brunners. Listeners, please tweet at us. Tell us your Brunners. We would like to know what parts of this tickled you. Was it the part about hating LA? Because we both liked that a whole lot. You can email us at thejackson2pod@gmail.com. I hope that's correct. I believe it is. If you do that, or if you write us a review on your podcast review platform of choice, or you tweet at us, we will read it on the air, regardless of whether it is nice or mean or funny or in French. If you should do so, please let us know by which name you would like to be referred. Now, that's all stuff you can do for free. But, William, let's say the listeners wanted to buy a waterbed from us.
You can just sell me directly. That'd be nice.
Well, okay, but like, what kind of waterbed can they get for that?
Well,
what do we have? What do we have on offer with the built-in lava lamp?
If you want official selling, officially give us money, You can proceed
with the koi swimming inside the waterbed.
You can proceed to patreon.com/ TheJackson2, all one word.
Yeah.
And where you will be greeted by a bevy of options.
Yeah.
There is a $2 option, whereupon you will be given access to, early access to all episodes. Meaning that as soon as Casey can get the episode edited together, you get to put it in your ears.
Correct.
The early access bonus feed is typically, two episodes ahead of the main.
Yep, two of them shits up on there right now. I put them up yesterday.
If that is not enough, you can go up to the $5.
Ridiculous.
Which gives you access to exclusive pre-shows for every episode, which is just a little thing we do before the read-through proper, where we talk about what's going on in our lives, do the general friendship talk.
Right. What do we talk about today?
We talked about my new job.
Hell yeah.
We talked about some very upsetting books you were reading and very upsetting shows you were watching.
Correct. In a good way. And then you mentioned a show that's upsetting and a bad you should not watch this way.
In the most sincere and, like, real language I can, I do not want you to watch that show.
No, don't. And you'll have to subscribe to that level, to that tier, to find out what we're talking about. And you need this advice in your life. Also, I talked about a book by an author that I love, and that I wasn't sure I would like this book, and then I forgot who the fuck I was dealing with, and quickly realized I needed to get on board. So, William, you're looking at the tiers. You're looking at the Patreon page right now, right?
At this moment.
What's the $5 tier called? What's it called?
It used to be called the True Blue 2 Crew, which is excellent alliteration.
Yeah.
And now it's called Cut the Crust Off. You schmuck.
What clever bastard did that?
Oh, you're lucky I don't have access to these.
I really am. I need to be regulated. But that's what the sertraline is for. So, yes. So that's the cut the crust off tier. That's the $5, which is a pretty good value. The pre-shows are what usually at least around half an hour, 45 minutes, right?
Half an hour to an hour, generally.
Yeah, and like so far, most of our fan interaction has been about the pre-shows with our Patreon patrons. Like they're leaving comments. They're offering to get us mics at wholesale cost if we need them, which is pretty
phenomenal.
Good. I'm probably going to take them up on that, actually, because this Yeti is dying on me. But anyway, the pre-shows are some good shit, and very often we will sprinkle references to them throughout the show itself. Not to, like, exclude people who don't listen to them, but because we're humans, and referencing conversations you just had is how human conversation works.
Yeah, absolutely.
So come cut the crust off.
And yet, there is even more.
Impossible. What more could there be?
For the $10, $10 per month.
A sawbuck. Get a Hamilton up in here.
I'll ask later.
What?
I don't know where the term sawbuck came from.
Yeah, me neither.
You're the one saying it.
Well, fucking, okay. Yeah, all right, then let's do this right now. Etymology.
You generally know what the things you say mean, because words are just like your bread and butter.
Okay, William, here's the thing. You generally believe that I know the meaning behind the words I say, and I rely on that a lot. Sawbuck is an old-fashioned slang term for a $10 bill. The phrase reportedly reflects the fact that the Roman numeral 10, which resembles a wooden sawbuck, so like a sawhorse, I guess, was traditionally used on U.S. $10 banknotes to denote the number 10.
Ah. Okay.
No, it has nothing to do with Cara Thrace.
I always thought it was like about actual saws in some way.
Right. Well, I mean, it's related to a sawhorse, so it's not.
Well, for that amount of money, you get a monthly movie review of your choice.
Correct. We just did Babylon 5. Next, we got to do Babylon 6.
Absolutely. Babylon 6,
the sixening.
The fettering. I don't know.
Hardcore 6.
I did not expect that from you.
I know. I know you didn't, buddy. That's a power I reserve.
Oh, very good.
You know, William, I'm often painted as something of a prude, and I don't think that's entirely fair. I am, in fact...
Well, you usually paint yourself as that.
I am, in fact, extremely... I am pro-sex for any and all people who enjoy it. I just don't think that, you know, you need to necessarily talk about it or be super open in public conversation with it about that. But I really do enjoy my sort of, like, squeaky clean image and then being able to slam a racy sledgehammer into the sides of people's heads from time to time.
That it's a good gig if you can get it.
Exactly. Beats working. So, Yeah, we haven't received, we don't know what we're doing for our next movie thing. We haven't quite figured out the logistics of, because we only have one patron at that level, and we haven't quite figured out, does that guy just get to choose the movie for us every month until we get more or what?
I guess we'll find out.
Come June, I guess we will, yeah.
And that is the $10 for the $20 for...
Yeah. What the fuck?
For an entire score of human dollars.
I don't believe it, William. What kind of benefit could possibly justify such expense?
Well, it's a bit of a lateral promotion.
Okay. All right.
You get a...
That's not a good start, but keep going.
You get access to 20... All of a sudden you got access to $20.
Well, that's actually the opposite of true. We get access to $20. Probably closer to 18, actually, after Patreon takes its cut.
Yeah, I almost said you get access to $20. That's not how that works.
You know what? I would like access to $20, actually.
Yeah, pay $20, get $20. It's a great deal.
It's a good bargain.
You get access to...
You're going
to
do great at your restaurant job.
Yeah, no, I know how economics works. I know how money...
You know how ordering things works.
Yeah. You get access to uncut episodes where... All the, like, pauses and mouth farts and other stupid shit that gets cut out of the normal episode and makes us seem like concise, intelligent human beings. You get the warts and all approach where you get to see the gross, unfiltered idiocy underneath.
If this slick, varnished presentation, if our dexterity and clarity of thought is, you know what? It's honestly, it's a little artificial for you. Like, it's a little glazed, and you want the real meat underneath. You want to crack open the crab claw and pull out all that goop within because you forgot to cook the crab first. This is for you.
And that is our Patreon.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
Phenomenal.
So, next time, you should read... Chapter 18, Annabeth recreates a Rodney Dangerfield movie and goes back to school. Where she's probably gonna end up like teaching the class, right? I mean, I feel like that's probably the obvious move set up.
Oh yeah, no,
and she's like,
it's definitely gonna be a, I'm not locked in here with you, you're not locked in here with me. But
yeah, absolutely. And like she's teaching, she's doing like an architecture lecture, if you will, about like, here's brutalism and here's versus neoclassical art. And all of them are like, this is botany. And she's like, this is shut up. Now learn about these fucking flying buttresses. So that'll be pretty good. That'll be pretty good. Hold on to your buttresses. So you can do all of that. You can at us on your platforms of choice. We would very much love to hear from you. If you would tell a friend, it would be super helpful. Because I'm not going to lie, when I've posted those first couple episodes on the subreddit and our numbers went up, it was pure serotonin. Just straight to old Casey's engine is what happened. And then I'm not allowed to do that as much as I like. So if you could tell a friend, or I think you're allowed to post on it about it on your various platforms of choice, if you could make our numbers go up, we would very much appreciate it, and you could do that for free. Tell them how stupid we are, please. The answer is very.
Yeah.
But William's tall, so he gets respect no matter what. That's just automatic.
Unless it's from you.
Well, yeah, it's because I know better. That's because I have seen through the illusion of height.
Hmm.
I know that there's no such thing as up, and therefore your dominion over it, it requires me to believe in such a thing.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Casey rejects the Z-axis.
That's true! I always have and I always will!
Get out of here, Mario 64. You don't exist.
If only. Although it did give us Banjo-Kazooie, if nothing else. Much in the way that GoldenEye gave us Perfect Dark. So,
yeah.
I mean, there's that. There's
I don't like either of those games.
What? You don't?
GoldenEye and Perfect Dark.
Oh, you don't like either of those yet? Yeah, that's fair.
I like Banjo, even though it is
a
twisting maze that I cannot actually finish most of the time.
Yeah, no, same. That's reasonable. In any event, those are all the things. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being part of this wonderful, wonderful journey with us. We will see you next time. Until then, be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Eat the blue food. Wear your goddamn masks. And if a man tries to sell you a waterbed, just say, "Water? I hardly know her." And walk away.
Water?
Bye, buddies.
Never touch this stuff yourself. Bye, my buddies.
It promotes rust. I thought you were going to continue riffing on that. Oh, no, I'm all alone. Oh, God, I can't be alone with my thoughts. Bye, all our buddies. Kapla. Let's see. Room tone having been accomplished. What else can I do to fill the void here? I could do some raps. You guys want to hear some cool raps? Alright. I'll do Stoop Sale, I guess. Give me a fat beat. Somebody? Just one of you. Just one of you that's listening. Just give me a beat, if you would. Okay, thank you. Finally. God. Holding up your end of the fucking bargain. Okay. Alright. I nearly blew right by in my hurry to the subway when I heard someone say, "Isn't autumn lovely?" As I stopped to confirm this was correct, to the proprietor, couldn't help but inspect the folding table by the railing laden with her goods, ashtray made of metal, little angel made of wood. Hand mirror with the handle broken, still pretty nice. Wall wart to charge telephone, trays to make ice. The advice of my neighbor, go ahead, take your time. We'll negotiate price on whatever you find. And shining in the detritus, I saw the slightest flash of something special. Began to feel the slightest little tingle in my innards. I was like, what's that? Her bare tooth chuckle, it's a buckle for a strap on a hat, like a lady wears to court or church. It holds a special property. I'll show you how it works. It was a stoop sale, which is like a yard sale if you live in Brooklyn, which I do. And at the stoop sale, which is like a yard sale, there it was in Brooklyn, I got my due. Somehow I knew she was serious. I reached a ticket to pick it up. I think I heard William coming back. William, are you back? No? Somehow I knew she was serious. I reached to pick it up. She stayed my hand. Her reprimand was abrupt. "Hey, this little trinket," she said, "grants wishes. It could make everything you ever eat delicious. Can take away concerns so you can sleep at night. Can make the love of your life and you reunite. Can right wrongs done in your past or in your future. Make a winner out of whoever holds it roots for. But it only ever does one thing as you take possession of it. That's the wish to which it clings. So think very carefully before we make a deal. If there's anything impossible you want to make real, if there's anything improbable you'd like to assure, well, it can happen. That's when you have to endure the regret that accompanies said decision making. All the other wishes in the world you'd be forsaking at the stoop sale, which is like a yard sale if you live in Brooklyn, which I do. And at the stoop sale, which is like a yard sale, was it where in Brooklyn I got my due. It was a stoop sale, which is like a yard sale if you live in Brooklyn, which I do. I heard William's door close. I think he's probably back.